Hello everybody and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. Today is day 12 of the Season of the Witch, and today we're going back in time to the 1950s, talking about, you guessed it, horror of the 1950s. Now the 1950s is a interesting time period. There was an abundance of horror movies in the 50s, unlike the dearth that we had through parts of the 1940s. But the quality of these movies is definitely lacking overall. That's not to say that these movies are all terrible, or that there aren't some good ones in there, but the 50s just is this strange time period, because we have people that are or not people, but everyone's kind of dealing with the Cold War in the US and the aftermath of the end of World War II in the mid 40s. But along with that, you know, we have the rise of the baby boomer generation, and really we have people that are really trying to get teenagers on board and trying to really start to market towards them. So we have this combination of movies that are basically all B movies, as I've mentioned. They're creature features. They had to deal with mad scientists, which is something that we've been seeing quite a lot of even before this. But it's all just kind of silly. And not that silly is bad or anything, but I mean, in the 50s, we get everything from Godzilla and the Hammer horror movies in England and Japan, respectively, to shit like Planet Nine from Outer Space, which, I mean, I know people like to watch it because it's a quote-unquote bad movie, but it's pretty unwatchable. I mean, we also have, like, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, and its sequels come out in the 50s, although that, once again, kind of goes along with this idea of creature features in this time period. As I mentioned, like, Them, for example, which is just one of many movies that came out during that time. We have, like, this, more of this, that's the word I'm looking for, like science fiction bend to everything, to the horror that we're seeing. So we get things not just like Them, but we also get like Attack of the Crab Monsters or Attack of the 50-Foot Woman or The Incredible Shrinking Man or the Wasp Woman. These are all movies, the giant leeches, the she-creature. These are all these crazy creature features with like giant animals or people that are mutated or shrunken down. And they're not really horrific. I mean, at the time, the thing with the 50s is that unfortunately a lot of these movies don't hold up. Like I mentioned, like the creature from the Black Lagoon, like that's some grade A like makeup that they're using, and that suit is fucking great, and the sequels aren't as good as that original movie, but to me they are. But even with something like The Creature, you see these tendencies of stuff that you would see all over movies from the 50s, like this bombast of like trying to scare people with just the music or like this kind of overemphasis on dread, and not like in a good way, but more like something scary is gonna happen, you know, like it's gonna pop out. And we get this this is going to sound bad, but we get like this hucksterism from people like William Castle, who directed lots of and produced actually lots of different types of movies from like the 30s on through the 60s. But in the 50s, he did all he could to promote shit like having like for something like The Tingler in 1959, which had seats set up where when the Tingler escapes, like there would be buzzers on the seats. If I remember correctly, for House on Haunted Hill, you could get a life insurance warranty before in case you died of fright right before that movie. And thinking the Tingler too, like you had to scream your head off in order to stop the Tingler from getting you. And this is just some of the lengths that people would go to in order to entice people to come in to see horror movies. And when I see people, a lot of times I mean children and teenagers, because that was a lot of the audience for these movies. Now, that's not to say that everything was like that, but the vast majority of movies would kind of fall into this idea of movies aimed at kids and just kind of looking for things that are silly, that are kind of funny, that are just kind of out there. I mean, this is where we have you know, movies starring professional wrestlers from the 50s or playing the monsters in them. Like, I'm thinking like Tor Johnson, who, if you've seen Ed Wood from Tim Burton, then he was played by George the Animal Steel in that, but you would know who I'm talking about. We also have this reluctance on people like, what was it, Vampira, was that her name? Who was like the predecessor to Elvira, Mistress of the Dark in the 1980s, who would host creature features on, you know, before they released the movie theaters and on television, which was like kind of a new thing in the 50s. But like I said, that's not to say that everything was just utter shit in the 50s or that it's unwatchable. There's definitely movies out there, some of which I've talked about from the 50s, Creature from the Black Lagoon, but there are some movies that are worth checking out, and I wanted to spotlight a couple that just kind of, I think, kind of give us an idea of the themes that are being talked about in these horror movies. I think one of the ones that I've talked about before that is probably one of the best from the 50s is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, a movie that's been remade plenty of times, and that really is kind of commenting on what was going on in that time period. Along the same lines, we have the Howard Hawks directed The Thing from Another World, which was remade into the John Carpenter classic, John Carpenter's The Thing, in the 1980s. The Thing from Another World is based on, and the, you know, the remake are based on this novella, Who Goes There, which is about these scientists in the Arctic who come across this creature. And in the novella, it's closer to kind of the idea of what happens in the John Carpenter story. But in this one, we have this bloodthirsty alien organism that's found in this remote Arctic outpost, much like in the remake, right? But the creature itself basically looks like a giant man that kills people, and it's insinuated that it is a vegetable life form, so you're basically, it's a basically a killer carrot. The great thing about this movie, though, is that it has some pretty good effects, but I think it's able to really kind of have this tension throughout it and this suspense, which is something that you don't really get a lot of, like, outside of, like, this exaggerated sense of suspense in the 1950s. But, you know, we have aliens in this. We have science fiction ideas. These are the things that are the hallmarks of the 50s, something that you would see even in serials. And like I mentioned before, when I talked last season, when I talked about Indiana Jones, the reason that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is so heavy on aliens is because that's where serials went to in that time period of the 50s. And The Thing from Another World, I think, is a good example of that. There's also The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is also another sci-fi movie that I've talked about before. But, yeah, like, science fiction and horror are very intertwined in this time period, with, like, also the idea of, God, I'm blanking, mad scientists, you know? And I think one movie that I kind of really shows, gives a good idea of a mad scientist movie, but also also shows that this marketing towards teenagers and almost like this nostalgia for earlier movies from the 30s and 40s is I Was a Teenage Werewolf, which stars Michael Landon, and who he ends up seeking help from this doctor who provides hypnotherapy, but in doing so, Dr. Brandon hypnotizes him and turns him into a werewolf, this bloodthirsty creature that goes around killing people at night. And this movie's it's not that great. For me, whenever I think of this, it reminds me more of the book It by Stephen King. Not like the movies, because obviously, due to copyright reasons, they couldn't use the teenage werewolf, which is basically a werewolf in a red letterman's jacket with white sleeves. But it's a werewolf, you know, so they could use a werewolf, for example, in the 1990 It version, but in the recent movies, they just didn't use a werewolf at all. And there's, like, legal issues for that, but that's kind of my go-to when I think of this particular movie. And it's really not that great of a werewolf movie or that great of a movie to begin with, but it's part of this whole idea of, like, there's also, like, I Was a Teenage Frankenstein, and I could have sworn there was something like I Was a Teenage Vampire or Teenage Dracula, but I may be wrong about that. I might be thinking of something else, like maybe Monster on Campus, which has a similar idea of this someone who, against their will, is experimented on and then ends up going on a rampage and killing people. This movie also, part of this idea of marketing to teenagers in this time period also just added to this whole idea of adding I Was a Teenage blankety blank to a lot of movies and songs and whatnot. And, you know, like, for the time, I'm sure this was pretty great. And if you want to just see the novelty of it, then it's worth checking out for that. But it's not that great of a movie, as I mentioned. And it's just interesting to see something that would come along, that's coming out alongside these, like, delinquent movies like, you know, Asphalt Jungle and like, blanking on the name, but, shit, I can't remember the name at all of this movie. Fuck, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so we have this whole idea of movies just aimed at teenagers, and I think it's an example of that more than anything. As I mentioned, you know, though, aliens were also a big thing in this time period, and I think one of the best alien movies, and one that's also been remade plenty of times and was actually tapped to be remade by Rob Zombie, of all people, last decade, but obviously wasn't, is The Blob. The Blob is... This is just probably as cheesy as something at, like I Was a Teenage Werewolf, but it's better done, and it has this whole idea of just this gelatinous blob that eats people, and as it eats people, it grows. And of course, this this alien life form reaches Earth on a meteor, and there's teenagers that try to warn everybody, but no one pays attention to these, like, teenagers because they're teenagers. And little by little, it starts to take over everything and eat, like, consumes everything. And as it consumes, it becomes bigger and bigger. And I know some people have talked about how The Blob is like a stand-in for communism. It's a stand-in for greed, for capitalism, like, you name it. Like, this whole idea of being taken over by this thing that can't be controlled, that has a mind of its own, and that's trying to make us all conform in a certain way. I mean, obviously it's eating people, but the idea being that we're all one, you know. And of course it's stopped by simple CO2. It gets frozen, basically. And in order to stop it from continuing its rampage, it's dropped off in the Arctic with the always appropriate "the end" with a question mark at the end of the end. But thinking about it, you know, if this were real, with our climate change issues right now, we'd be happy to deal with The Blob on top of everything else in 2020. And to be perfectly honest with you, if there was a gelatinous blob going around eating everything in its path, it would just kind of just fit with all the other crazy shit that's been going on this year. But The Blob, it's worth checking out. There was a 1980s remake, which is actually pretty good as well. But either one, you can't really go wrong with either one if you want to watch The Blob. One of the big stars of the 1950s, in horror at least, was Vincent Price. Vincent Price, one of my favorite actors, someone who I've mentioned before as probably being, with my generation, I think people, the first thing they jump to is the Thriller video, because he did the voiceover in Thriller. But I guess we can't really talk about Michael Jackson anymore now that everyone agrees that he was maybe not the nicest person. Regardless, though, that's the cultural touchstone I think a lot of people from my generation think of with Vincent Price. But older generations, people that grew up in this time period, know Vincent Price from a myriad number of horror movies, including movies such as The Fly, which I talked about last time. Well, I talked about the Cronenberg remake, but just about it briefly. And among other things, like Castle Haunted Hill, there was also House of Wax, 1953. House of Wax was one of the first movies that was shot in stereo vision 3D, because that's right, I forgot, one of the other big things in the 1950s was 3D. 3D fucking sucks, but it's a marketing ploy, and as a marketing ploy, you know, you can get people to come in, spend some extra money to wear these stupid glasses for the screen to look a little like it's coming towards you. I don't care for 3D, but and the fact that it just kind of seems to show up every 30 years or so and ruin movies for a while. But House of Wax is this fun movie directed by Andre de Toth, who, this is going to sound fucked up, the guy, he was blind in one eye, so he couldn't even fucking see 3D in 3D, you know, like, because if you don't know the way 3D works, or at least in the 50s, the way it worked, I'm sure you've seen those red and blue glasses. The meaning behind that is that each side of the frame is being shot with two different cameras, and so it's able to kind of merge them together. When you use these glasses, it unblurs the picture, and you get this effect of it jumping out of the screen, which isn't great, to be honest. And even in something where, like Avatar, where it actually kind of adds some depth, it, at the end of the day, it doesn't, you know, it really doesn't make that much of a difference. But House of Wax is this crazy story starring Vincent Price as Professor Henry Girard, who owns a titular House of Wax with the most lifelike wax figures ever. And there's a good reason for that, and that's because the House of Wax is actually a morgue. In this House of Wax, in this wax museum, is actually a corpse that's been covered in wax and made up to look like these historical figures and famous people. We also have in this movie, interestingly enough, Charles Baczynski, in one of his first movie roles playing Igor. Charles Baczynski, who I think most people probably know, and me, I would know him better as Charles Bronson. Charles Bronson was mainly a TV actor and a bit player in movies through the 40s and 50s, and he didn't really break out in movies until the late 50s, and probably for sure in The Magnificent Seven, which I believe came out in 1960. But if you want to see a young Charles Bronson get decapitated, or insinuated that he gets decapitated, you should check out House of Wax. House of Wax was also remade about 15 years ago, and I think the claim of fame was that Paris Hilton was in it, because Paris Hilton was a thing at the time, and she gets fucking killed brutally. So for a lot of people, that was enough reason to go see the House of Wax remake. But, you know, there's a certain charm to Vincent Price movies, and Vincent Price always gives it his all, and he has such a distinctive voice, and he has this flair to how he presents himself and how he delivers his lines and how he plays his character. So it's always really great to see him in movies, and House of Wax is definitely a fun one to check him out in. Now, I feel like most of these movies that I talked about are pretty on the low end. Some of them are pretty shitty, or they're not necessarily that great, or they're okay, but that's not to say that there wasn't any prestige horror movies that came out in the 50s. I talked about, like I mentioned before, like, you know, Godzilla, which came out in 54, out of Japan, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is also not necessarily prestige, but definitely has some big ideas. But if we're talking about a prestigious horror movie in the 50s, can't go wrong with Diabolique from France, directed by Henri-Georges Clouzot, and starring Simone Signoret and Vera Clouzot as this woman, and these two women, one who is married to a school principal, and the other being his mistress, who end up killing him, and then it becomes this cat and mouse game of them trying to get rid of the body, which they decide to dump into a pool, which doesn't sound like the best idea, but when the pool is drained, the body is missing, and then it's this kind of cat and mouse game of what's going to happen. This movie is a masterclass in suspense. It's a thriller. It's really well done. It's part of the Criterion Collection, and not that everything in the Criterion Collection is like masterpieces, but everything in the Criterion Collection is definitely something that is distinctive, and this movie is that, if nothing else. Even like just the way it's shot, a lot of it being, it's almost like watching a film noir as a horror movie, which is an interesting take. And I think there's a lot of overlap between those. And I've talked about some of those film noirs, things like Out of the Past or Nightmare Alley or Gaslight, where it's horror, but it's also a film noir. And there's just this great overlap. And Diabolique is a really, really interesting take, a really great idea of what that looks like. And it's a legitimately good movie. So I just kind of wanted to end on something good from the 50s. That's it for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.